This is Masters of Dispute Resolution on PodClips. Masters of Dispute Resolution is designed to provide those involved in the mediation process with the views of the most experienced and accomplished mediators and others experienced in the process. Through our discussions, you will gain insight into how to address and overcome difficult issues and achieve more satisfying results in mediation. Your host is Len Levy, mediator and arbitrator with ADR Services, Inc., a leading alternative dispute resolution provider. Lynn litigated complex cases for more than 30 years and has been a mediator since 1998 and is a member of the National Academy of Distinguished Neutrals. He has been recognized as a super lawyer in alternative dispute resolution each year since 2014. And now your host, Lynn Levy.
Thank you, Daryl. Welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining us in Season 4 of Masters of Dispute Resolution, a podcast which will add tools to your mediation toolbox. We're brought to you by the National Academy of Distinguished Neutrals and ADR Services, Inc. In each podcast episode, you've been hearing a story about conflict, the impact of the conflict on the lives of the parties involved, how resolution was reached, and lessons to be taken away from the conflict and its resolution. Now, many of the details of the story you're about to hear have been modified to preserve the confidentiality essential to mediation while also conveying the essence of the conflict and its resolution. Today, we are going to be discussing a personal injury case with a couple of twists. And our guest today is Jeannie Bailing. Jeannie is on the ADR Services panel, and actually before mediation was an attorney representing plaintiffs and defendants for two decades and specialized in personal injury, product liability, sexual abuse or harassment, and employment litigation. And we share something. We share a background dealing with subrogation cases. My first year in practice was nothing but subrogation cases, and I was a very busy trial attorney. And it's great training. Jeannie also handled a number of cases to jury verdict, including vertical prosecution of sexual abuse and assault cases, gang offenses, and homicides. A really varied background that Jeannie brings to her role as mediator. And now for decades, Jeannie has passionately delved into mediation theory and practiced it throughout her career. Her global experiences, I mean, when I say global experiences, Jeannie, you spent some time in Singapore and for about 5 years, I think, and taught business law and political science. So that background really helped prepare Jeannie for her approaches to mediation, how to use the various tools. Also, Jeannie is a very empathetic mediator who genuinely cares about people and their unique perspectives. And with her exceptional ability to connect and relate to participants, Jeannie is an invaluable asset to any mediation, as you are about to hear. So Jeannie, welcome to Masters of Dispute Resolution.
Len, thank you for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Well, we're going to get right down into it. This Jeannie is going to tell us about a case that involved a truck driver. It was a case that I'm just going to let Jeannie tell us what was the background of that case and the injuries that were incurred.
Great. Thanks, Len. Well, you are correct. It was a truck driver and it was a personal injury action. It was not on a freeway. It was actually in an interesting situation, which I've changed the facts a little bit because I can't be too specific, but it was in a closed environment of a basically a cargo area of a business, and a very big business. And in this cargo area, they let trucks in, and of course the truck drivers. And the only other individuals or vehicles that were in this area were the owners of the cargo area, so the defendant in this case, the defendant's vehicles that helped offload and unload these trucks. And so this particular truck driver was a gentleman from, he had come to the United States from Mexico, and he had worked hard all his life, and he was 62 years old. And he didn't have a ton of education, but he had been able to be successful as a truck driver and had a wife and kids. And he was on at this cargo area in the early winters, in early evening, so it was dark. And he's parked waiting for his opportunity to load his truck. And as he's parked, he's in a line and realizes he's going to be in line for quite some time because it was a very busy, busy time. And he turns his vehicle off and he takes his seatbelt off. And as he's sitting there, he gets hit. And lo and behold, he, you know, is shaken about in the cab of the truck and he's injured. And he cannot see who has hit him. It's dark. He's in shock. The owners of the cargo area and the security come over and they talk to him and they take a report. And then he goes off and gets medical care. And it takes some time, but of course his injuries are diagnosed and he's got some soft tissue injuries of one of his shoulders, but he's got a torn rotator cuff in his other shoulder, which eventually required surgery. He had some injuries to his lumbar and cervical spine, and he had some conservative treatment for those injuries. But he had, you mentioned subrogation, he had a workers' comp claim. He made the claim to his company where he had been driving. And so he had a workers' comp claim, and then both workers' comp, the comp carrier, as well as the plaintiff, made claims against the defendant. And so he actually was in a situation after his comp case was completed that he was considered unable to drive a truck. And that had been something that he had worked hard to do and something that had allowed him to, as I said, you know, take care of his wife and children. And being 62 years old without a huge amount of education, he did not have, he was essentially, my take on it was that he was kind of afraid of starting a new career. What career could he do as a gentleman who, you know, only kind of knew one particular job, and he did it well, right? And so one of the things that was difficult for him is the loss of not just the physical injuries, which were very difficult for him, but the loss of his livelihood and the loss of his ability to make a living, and going from, you know, working 12 hours a day to being home sitting on the couch in pain was very difficult for him. And I know it was difficult for his family as well. And so there were some twists and turns in this case. There had been a report that the defendant and the security guard had made. And in the report, there was no mention of any witnesses. And there was no mention of any vehicle that was sitting there, you know, with a crashed in front bumper. And so there was nobody knew who hit him. He didn't see it. Nobody knew. And
well, let me just interject something. What was the size of the truck that the plaintiff was in? Was it one like a semi?
It was an 18-wheeler with two chassis that then had very large containers loaded onto the chassis. So it wasn't the typical trailer in the back. It was a different type of semi-truck, but it was the big semis.
Okay, so a pretty sizable vehicle is not just a little sideswipe with a, you know, somebody on a skateboard hitting the truck or something. Well, we're talking about a major collision. It sounds
well, like. his truck was big, but they couldn't figure out for sure who had hit him, because nobody sat around and waited, you know, to make a report. And then the case proceeded, and of course there was the subrogation aspect. Actually, as you know, Len, sometimes that case was filed and plaintiff's case was filed separately. So then they were joined and the two consolidated cases became one. And when they became one, there was a mediation, and the mediation was conducted, and it was prior to a couple of important depositions, but the mediation was conducted. And there was, for some reason, I wasn't there, I wasn't the first mediator. For some reason, there wasn't a lot of back and forth. They didn't really do many steps in the dance, so not a lot of distributive bargaining. And at some point in time, the mediator gave them a mediator's proposal. And the mediator's proposal was very close to the plaintiff's initial demand. And the mediator's proposal was very far from the defendant's initial offer. And so the mediator's proposal did not resolve the case, and they proceeded with the litigation and conducted some additional discovery. And lo and behold, the defendant learned of a witness. And there was a witness who saw the whole thing and explained that it was, in fact, a vehicle owned by the defendant and the defendant's company that hit the plaintiff's truck. And therefore, the plaintiff's attorneys believed that they had a very good case against the defendant, saying that, yes, in fact, you are responsible for this accident and all of the injuries to the plaintiff, and of course the subrogation lien. And that's how it was left. They were going to trial, and they decided they were going to have a second mediation, and that's when I became involved.
Well, there is an awful lot to unpack in terms of what took place in the prior mediation, the effect of that mediator's proposal, things of that nature, which we will discuss following the break. I am Len Levy. My guest is Jeannie Bailing. We're on Masters of Dispute Resolution.
Masters of Dispute Resolution would like to thank ADR Services Incorporated, your partner in resolution, and its founder, Lucy Barron, for supporting this podcast. ADR Services is one of the leading providers of alternative dispute resolution in California, leveraging technology to drive resolution. ADR Services is committed to dynamism in the face of growing client need and an ever-evolving legal climate. Now operating offices in all major legal markets of California, ADR Services provides unparalleled in-person and remote resolution services through its exclusive panel, comprised of more than 130 of the most distinguished and talented neutrals across the state, capable of handling challenging and complex mediations, arbitrations, and other procedures in every field of law. When you seek the services of a neutral and you want results and satisfied clients, contact ADR Services, www.adrservices.com.
Welcome back to Masters of Dispute Resolution. I'm Len Levy, and I'm chatting with Jeannie Bailing about a case that was mediated before this session that Jeannie is about to describe. The mediation before obviously resulted in no settlement. And Jeannie, could you comment on perhaps the effect of that prior mediation, if any, on this mediation that you were doing?
Oh, it definitely had an effect on this mediation. The number that came out in the mediator's proposal Although it did not settle the case, it validated the plaintiff's demand, and it really set the bar pretty high for the plaintiffs, both the plaintiff himself and plaintiff's attorneys, because it's one thing to as a plaintiff attorney to make a high demand and then reconsider, but once there's a mediator, whether they're an attorney with much experience or a retired judge, once a mediator kind of puts a number out there, often that becomes the be all, the end all, the number that's going to settle the case. And so that was a number that was quite far from the defendant's initial offer. And so it really made it difficult to start the second mediation because of the difference in the it wasn't just the difference in the plaintiff's mind, the offers and the demands, with the idea that it was a distributive bargaining. It was kind of like, well, we were told that this is the value of the case. And so it became very difficult.
And that set it basically set a floor for the plaintiff in the plaintiff's mind, so that to come off of that, they're giving up something that seems real to them.
Correct. Correct.
All right, so you're having to deal with that issue. How did you deal with that issue?
Well, I did have some extensive pre-mediation phone calls with both sides. And so I learned quite a bit from the defense about what had happened between the two mediations. I learned quite a bit from the plaintiffs about how the case was handled. There had been a younger attorney handling the case and a different attorney at the first mediation, and now the trial attorney had stepped in. The trial attorney was very much, I can try this case. I want to try this case. The defense provided me with a number of facts, and some of the facts had to do with that witness I mentioned. So there was, after the first mediation and before the second mediation, there was in discovery, there was the name of a witness that the plaintiffs had that supposedly saw the entire thing. That witness was deposed. There were a few issues in the deposition, one of them being that what the witness described as the vehicle, specifically the color on the vehicle, the defendant said they didn't have any vehicles with that color in their fleet. And so then it becomes, a question of, was the witness really there? Why didn't the witness report to the security guards? Why didn't the witness, give his name to the driver at least? Why did the witness all of a sudden appear, right? And what was the witness motivation? And then if the witness really saw it, why was there this discrepancy in color? I had mentioned earlier that it was at night. And so there is an issue of whether the lighting was good enough for the witness to see the color. So the color might have been an issue, but it might not have been the gotcha issue, right? But there was, of course, a problem with the witness. And that was after the deposition, the witness couldn't be found. And so there was a deposition, but there was no longer a live person to bring to trial. And of course, we all know you can use a transcript or a video or whatever, but it's not the same as having a live witness there. And so that was a potential big issue on both sides. And so I had to explain to the plaintiff, of course, what that meant. And of course, doing the usual explanation to the plaintiff of what a jury trial entails. And we know it as mediators and as litigators, but individuals who have been hurt, who don't necessarily understand that it is the plaintiff's burden of proof, they don't understand that also the jury is going to be listening to and watching everything. I just don't think that an average individual who gets in one car accident in their lifetime understands that those 12 jurors watch you walk down the hallway to go to the restroom and watch what kind of shoes you're wearing when you walk down the hallway to go to the restroom. And if you can walk, then why can't you work?
Right. Well, there seems to be a change in the risk factors that you could bring to the table in both rooms. And when I say a change from that first mediation, because at that time the depositions had not been taken and the witness had not been found. To overcome that mediator's proposal floor effect, what I'm understanding is that you brought out the risk factors that were necessarily not included and warranted a change in view of how the how those risk factors would play out in the future in a trial.
Absolutely. On both sides.
Right. So you were able to essentially use that tool and hit the reset button on that. So is that correct? I mean,
Yes. I think there was a lot of reluctance from the plaintiff to come off the number that was the mediator's proposal. I mean, this was one of those mediations where numbers were not exchanged early on, or there was a lot of discussion of where are we at? What does this look like? You know, get our arms around the issues. And of course we had a subrogation lien, which was not insignificant. It covered a shoulder surgery. It covered medical care. It covered temporary disability and permanent disability payments. And so it was a chunk, and it was something that, you know, had to be considered by both sides when they were trying to see if they were going to be able to resolve the case.
And for the making the decision for the subrogor, was there a representative there, or was there just an attorney?
There was an attorney.
Who was actually present at the mediation?
Well, at the mediation, there were two plaintiff's counsels and the plaintiff, and the plaintiff had limited English. There was also the subrogation attorney, and he had contact with his client, but his client was not at the mediation. And then there were two defense counsels, of course, and their representative from their client as well. There were a lot of people, a lot of moving parts in every room, actually.
Okay, so with these moving parts, how did you get the parties to move to the settlement range, even into the settlement range?
Yeah, well, it's, for me, it's any movement is progress. And so it really became a chipping away. It was, back and forth, mainly between plaintiff and defendant, with occasionally checking in with the subrogation attorney, talking about all the issues and the ones that we talk about. Even though the defense attorneys know how much it's going to cost to try the case, we still, you still mention that, and then you move on. There was also a vocational rehab report, which gave some significant numbers for the plaintiff's loss of earnings. And although he wasn't planning to work forever, he was 62, as I mentioned, he was planning to work for 5-6 more years. And there was a question of whether he could do anything. And if he could do anything, it'd be more like, very sedentary type of low income work. And so even though there was a range, it still was a significant number. So we had to discuss all of the parts and whether, you parse through it. You parse through the vocational rehab experts' numbers. You talk about the medical numbers, and you talk to the plaintiff about what all goes into a jury's consideration. And it's not just the general damages, it's all of these special damage numbers and what kind of numbers are reasonable and what you might be able to expect from a jury. And then you just keep getting the parties to reconsider, move, reconsider, move, reconsider, move, do the dance. And finally, you get to an area where maybe they're close. And that's when you kind of talk to the subrogation attorney about whether there's any movement on his behalf that would maybe make a little bit of a difference.
So doing the dance, what I'm hearing is that you're dealing with kind of a, exposing what the risk is, exposing the risk to the plaintiff. And was the plaintiff's perception of risk what needed most to be adjusted in this case? Or was there something, some impediment coming from the defense side that needed adjustment?
I would say it was more than the plaintiff's side. I think that was again validated by the number that had been provided by that mediator in the first mediation through the proposal.
Okay. Well, we're going to take another break. When we get back, we're going to be hearing what the result was. Maybe not the number, but we're going to be hearing what the result was and some interesting takeaways from this mediation. I'm Len Levy. I'm talking to Jeannie Baling about the truck driver and the floor.
Masters of Dispute Resolution is sponsored by the National Academy of Distinguished Neutrals. NADN is the premier invitation-only association of civil mediators and arbitrators in the United States, with members in every state of the nation. Only experienced ADR professionals who are widely acceptable to local plaintiff and defense firms are invited to join the Academy's roster. The Academy's website, NADN.org, is the most widely visited neutrals database in the world today, with over 40,000 law offices, insurance companies, and corporations visiting our free website annually. Firms can search for neutrals by many criteria, including location, case expertise, qualifications, language skills, and most NADN members also publish their available dates, calendars, online, making NADN.org the go-to website for law firms wishing to schedule appointments online with their preferred mediators. For more information, please visit www.nadn.org today.
Welcome back to Masters of Dispute Resolution. I am Len Levy, chatting with Jeannie Baling, and we have heard about the impediments that Jeannie masterfully overcame to help the parties reach a resolution. And we're going to get a little bit more into that. We talked about the risk factor here, and assessing, be able to not necessarily assess the risk, but to make the parties aware of what risks they might be taking. And at, before we broke, Jeannie, you were talking about how the plaintiff side was a little bit more of a challenge than the defense side. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. In this case, there were lots of challenges, but I would say the plaintiff side was a little more than the defense side. Absolutely.
Well, one of the reasons that that might be, and I've often said this to plaintiffs in mediations, that that person is the only participant in the mediation personally affected by the result. And so there is a little bit more of a, my life is going to change based on my decision here. Was there that you had to get into with the plaintiff?
I think there was that. It's hard to know how much what I said really was understood by the plaintiff or translated to the plaintiff. And I had mentioned earlier that, you know, I always think about the fact that if it's a person who is not litigation savvy and this is their maybe only car accident, and maybe they've had a couple in their life, but this is the only one that went to litigation, this is a whole new process. And this is scary for somebody, again, you know, somebody who did do really well for himself by becoming a truck driver, and had in his feeling had it all taken away from him. And so he was, of course, worried about not just the what do I get in my pocket, but how am I going to move on from this accident? How am I going to proceed from here? How am I going to take care of myself, my wife, my family? And so there was very much the idea that this is the most important thing probably in his life for the next several years, and what happens in the mediation affects him. I think the other interesting thing about this one is, as I said, the plaintiff had two attorneys, and one was somebody who had been kind of in the trenches, and one was somebody who was brought in to take the case to trial. And so depending on who the plaintiff himself listened to, one was, let's try this thing, and one was, well, you know, there have been these problems all along, and, you know, the mediator mentioned this. And so I think within the dynamics of that plaintiff's room, there were factors that pushed and pulled and could be really stressful and confusing for that plaintiff.
Well, one of the things that was that's apparent and is that you have a 62-year-old plaintiff. So he's not right there on retirement, but close to thinking about what retirement looks like. And this is kind of a forced retirement. So there are some givens and there are some things that he needed to get done. Did the attorneys have an understanding of that as a focus in recommending what to do to their client?
I think so. And I think that the attorneys had to talk to him about the perception that people were going to have of him. Because, again, I think a lot of his self-worth was in the idea that he was able to care for his family. And face it, guys, California is super expensive. And I kind of laughed when you said near retirement, because a lot of people these days are pushing their retirement age up for lots of reasons, right? People are living longer, but people are working longer, and people might be working longer because it's expensive to live in California. And so I think that there was a thought that they needed to kind of explain to him that this was just an early retirement versus a loss of his career. And I think that once they said, you know, you can do some small job, lots of retirees do some small job, and then it will be supplemented by the money that you have in the bank from this resolution. And you will be in, you know, you'll have more time at home, you'll get to spend time with your family, you know, all the good things that retirees look forward to. And yeah, he just wasn't ready.
Right. Right. And that, I will tell you, it's very difficult. I often tell the story, my mother, who passed away when she was 5 weeks short of 101.
Oh, my.
Had retired as a school teacher at age 65. And the thing that she constantly preached to me was, if you're going to retire, retire to something and not from something. And so the having the goal on the other end, or having the target on the other end for a plaintiff who's in effect forced retirement is sometimes a difficult thing to overcome. And it's helpful to have attorneys who are, at least I've found this, and please tell me if you agree, to have attorneys who've prepared the plaintiff in that aspect of his life, to really understand what his interests are.
It was a little bit hard to know how well prepared he was. I mean, I've had some mediations where I've talked to the plaintiffs and I've actually walked out of the room and the attorneys followed me and said, they told you more than they've ever told me. And so I've had some situations where I've kind of driven that conversation. Because of the language barrier, I was not 100% sure if I was communicating well with him, if what I was saying was resonating with him. And you know, I really hope it was, because at the end of the day, he did have a path forward. You know, he did have the ability to take, and a spoiler alert, the resolution, it did resolve. He did have the ability to take the settlement and to, you know, to live the way he wanted to live and to continue to support his family the way he wanted to, just not as a truck driver.
Right. Right. So, what was his attitude once resolution was reached?
Well, the resolution came down to dollars and cents, right? It was a number that was much lower than the mediator's proposal, but much higher than the original first offer by the defense. It was a significant number that even paying the subrogation lien allowed for the plaintiff to have a cushion, right? I mean, he probably would have to adjust his lifestyle to a certain extent, but most retirees do. But even the vocational rehab report and the expert said, you know, it went from not working at all to working some type of part-time or limited retirement job. So he had the ability to bring in additional monies and then supplement with the settlement.
Okay, so he could leave with the idea that his sense of self-worth remained intact because of this result, as opposed to, okay, well, now I'm going to be on the couch for the rest of my life watching whatever.
I do think so. And that, I think, is very, very important in, and I think personally, that is a very helpful aspect of mediation, because he got to envision his future and make a decision that allowed for his future rather than putting it in the hands of strangers who knew what they would do.
Was there anything that you felt the attorneys might have done or should have done on either side to help resolution? Or was there something that they specifically did do in the mediation and help really push this along?
I think the defense attorneys were very patient because this particular case, I don't know because I don't time it exactly, but I recall feeling like I was spending more time with the plaintiff. But I think that they were very patient, and I think that they were also understanding of his concerns as a human being while still protecting their client, obviously. I think that they did what they could to go to bat for him so that he could get a good result that would allow him to resolve the case.
And Jeannie, you helped bring it about. You overcame some significant roadblocks, so to speak. The mediator's proposal and the one thing that I always react to is mediator's proposals given too soon. It's kind of a look, if the case isn't going to settle, fine, but don't do any harm to it settling in the future. And because, you know, unless you have a mediator like you, Jeannie, who can recognize how to overcome such a impediment, some of these cases don't get settled. So thank you.
Thank you.
Well, we're out of time right now, and I am really, really pleased that we were able to have this conversation. I hope you will be back in the future. I hope you consider coming back in the future for another episode in seasons to come. And I want to ask you, what is the best way for someone to get in contact with you or your case manager to discuss mediation with you or to set up a mediation?
Well, it's through the ADR website. I have my own website, but really through the ADR website. My case manager is Leisha, and it's Leisha's team at ADR Services. But if you go to ADR Services, luckily, with the last name Bailing, I'm one of the first ones that pop up. So you can hopefully find me up there. And it gives you great opportunities to read my background, the Daily Journal article on me, and everything you need to know about how to get in touch.
Okay, well, thank you. And thank you, Daryl Wade, my engineer and producer. And I'm your host, Len Levy. This is Masters of Dispute Resolution on podclips.io, powered by Infogen Labs, Inc. I hope you will continue to enjoy the stories we bring you. And in the meantime, stay well, keep listening, and remember, peace of mind is enhanced when conflicts are resolved.
If you wish to contact Len Levy, you can reach him through his email at lslevy@adrservices.com. Through Len's website, lenlevymediate.com, telephone him at 818-903-5562, or contact his case manager at ADR Services, 213-683-1600.